The Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee is reviewing testimony from a hearing on improving pay flexibilities in the federal government. The committee heard from the Office of Personnel Management, from civilian and military personnel officials, and representatives of federal employee unions. Bill Dugan's national president of the National Federation of Federal Employees and one of the witnesses at that hearing. Bill, Mr. President, it's great to talk to you again. Thanks for coming on the program. What was the message overall that you wanted to convey to the committee at this hearing? Thanks for your time today, Bill.
Oh, thank you for having me. Well, the overall message that I wanted to convey was, number one, the GS pay system is not broken. There's this notion that somehow we need to reinvent a pay system for federal employees, and that's absolutely not the case. The problem that we've got with the pay system is that Congress and the White House for a number of years have not been adequately funding the pay system so that it works the way that it was designed to work. So that was the message I wanted to hammer home to the committee.
You talked in your testimony about the you gave a history of the GS system, and you talked about establishing locality pay with FEPCA. You had some comments about wage grade. You noted the three areas of pay flexibilities: recruitment incentives, relocation incentives, retention incentives. What's the flexibility that you would like to see agencies have, if any, added on to those? Or are those sufficient and it really is just the funding issue, Bill?
Well, I mean, I think those are certainly probably the cornerstone of what we need in terms of flexibilities. There are other flexibilities that are not directly compensation related that I think the government really needs to think long and hard about increasing the use of, such as alternative work schedules, such as telework. These don't cost anything extra, but they do provide a lot of good incentive to new employees, particularly like millennials who are younger workers that are coming into the workplace, because these are things that they're used to doing in terms of like working from home or working remotely, sitting at Starbucks on their laptops. So we ought to think about, how could that work in the government?
I will give you credit. One of the reasons I enjoy our conversations, Bill, is because you're willing to take on the tough issues. You have, in your written testimony, you wrote, what the federal government doesn't have and what has largely led to the 35% pay disparity between federal and matching non-federal salaries is a Congress and administration willing to allocate the necessary funds to fully implement FEPCA. And we've talked about the situation there. This is one of the ongoing issues that I wonder how we might get to a solution for, and that is the perception of people from different ways of looking at this issue of what the difference is between what people make in the federal government and what they make in the private sector. We saw the Cato study recently that I don't, to be honest with you, know if a lot of people put credibility into, that says that federal employees are overpaid by, it was a wild number, 70-some percent or something like
right,
that.
Right, yeah, I think it was 73%.
But the bottom line is what I took away from that study is we're not really any closer to a number that people can agree on. And you've made a great case on this program before about why the BLS numbers are the numbers we should pay attention to. But the bottom line is there's still a significant cohort of people in Congress, Bill, as you well know, that don't buy into that number. And I don't get a sense that we're any closer to getting a number that people can agree on.
Well, I think that's true. In fact, if you watched or listened to the testimony right at the end of the hearing, I believe Senator Lankford made a comment that, well, this is all good and well, but Congress is also having to deal with a $480 billion deficit, and so I think that's the challenge that they have. And I understand that that this pay issue is one of many that Congress has to take on, but the real issue is, if we're gonna talk and if we're really committed to having a federal workforce that is the best and brightest, and that we have the ability to recruit talented people and to retain those people once they're hired, we have to do something about this pay system, because it's very clear. We can debate the numbers. We can debate whether the pay gap is 35% or 12% or 15%. But the point here is that based on the best data that the federal government has been using for the past many, many years, It's very clear there is a pay gap, and we need to start doing what we can and taking opportunities when we can to begin to close that gap. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take many, many years to close, for example, a 35% pay gap. But, you know, when you're getting a 1% a year pay adjustment or a pay freeze, it's doing nothing to closing the gap. We're just widening the gap because we all know that inflation and consumer price index, is higher than zero.
Bill Dugan's the president of the National Federation of Federal Employees and was a witness at the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Subcommittee hearing on pay flexibilities in government. You cited telework and flexible work schedules as two potential tools that will be very effective in recruiting the next generation of federal talent. Do you believe that the necessary framework to run those well is in place already? We still keep hearing from agency HR people that middle managers are not completely sold on telework, especially.
Well, I think there are some barriers that continue to present themselves across the government. I think people are starting to use telework in most agencies and are beginning to get comfortable with it. But I think there's this sort of cultural barrier that we have in the federal government, particularly in middle management, that if a lot of managers and supervisors believe if they can't physically see and touch their employees in the workplace, they have a hard time believing that they're actually doing work. And so that becomes a barrier if you're going to allow these employees to work from home under a telework program.
What's the role for a union like yours in advocating for that kind of work flexibility for people?
Well, obviously, telework, our employees are interested in doing that. There's a couple of reasons why. If you live far outside the D.C. area, you spend a lot of time every day commuting to and from work, whether you're driving, whether you're taking, the subway or bus or whatever. It just adds to people's work day when you figure the commute time in. So if we can do away with that, that's going to give people more time outside of work, to spend with their family after the workday is over or before the workday starts. I think another reason, obviously we've got this whole, debate about climate change and global warming. People driving cars to and from work every day adds a lot of carbon into the atmosphere, and so it's contributing to global warming. So, the government should take responsibility and take the lead in trying to, reduce carbon emissions, and this is a good way to do that.
One part of your testimony included, where do we go from here? A very succinct title there. What do you think the next steps are, and who is it incumbent on, Bill, to take those steps?
Well, I think the tools are there for agencies to use. I think what has to happen, I think there's a couple things. Number one, Congress is going to have to deal with the budget and the financial situation in this country. We can't continue to go year to year facing these shutdown crises and continuing resolutions and people not knowing whether their agency is going to be open for work or not. That's one issue. So we got to find a way to really have a yearly budget built every year, and a long-term projected budget, scenario, so that agencies can see, that they're going to have the resources in the future to be able to offer these kinds of incentives. We can have all the incentives in the world, but if I don't have the money that's needed for some of these monetary type incentives, such as recruitment bonuses or retention or relocation, it's going to be very difficult for agencies to react in time under the current budget cycle and the way that the current budget plays itself out in agencies. They spend the first 6 months of a fiscal year trying to figure out how much money they got, and then the last 6 months trying to spend whatever money they got. So it's not a very efficient system. We have to do better and think about a more strategic way of looking at money if we're going to continue to try to promote these kinds of incentives.
Mr. President, it's great to talk to you as always. Thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you for having me.